I don't mean this in a mean way, but I hope you're stuck in traffic today because we got two great hours for you, and you're not going to want to miss a minute of it. Second hour, we're going to do the game show with super top secret guest who's also a senior apologist here at Catholic Answers. This hour, we talk movies from a Catholic perspective, from the man who knows both Catholicism and movie-ism very well, Deacon Stephen Graydonis. I'm your host, Cy Kellett. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Deacon Graydonis is the creator of decentfilms.com and the film critic for the National Catholic Register. He's a member of the prestigious New York Film Critics Circle and a permanent deacon in the Catholic Archdiocese of Newark. With David DeSerto, he co-hosts the Gabriel Award-winning cable TV show Real Faith for New Evangelization Television, and they're working on their holiday season right now. So if you want to see those shows, you go to netny.tv, netny.tv. Deacon Stephen Graydonis, thanks so much for being with us.
Cy, it's great to be with you. And if any of your listeners are stuck in traffic, I want them to know that I'm in solidarity with them. I'm just coming to the end of my own commute myself.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. Well, drive carefully. I have to say, I read your article in the National Catholic Register titled, What is a Christmas Movie? And somewhere in the middle of that, you made what I found to be a shocking claim, but one I find I cannot refute. You wrote, more than 120 years after the birth of cinema, the world still awaits a single bona fide Christmas classic that is actually devoted to the birth of Christ.
This is really one of the most amazing movies that hasn't been made stories that I can think of. There are so many great Christmas classics, as well as tons and tons of Christmas movies that are not so great. But really, the situation is a little bit like, you know, what if we had Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker, but not Handel's Messiah? What if we had only secular Christmas songs like Let It Snow and White Christmas, and no great Christmas carols like Joy to the World and Silent Night? I mean, It's a Wonderful Life is a great film, and there are many great versions of A Christmas Carol and other Christmas films that are really worth watching and recommending. And there are some films that touch on the birth of Jesus, but is there a film that tells the story of the birth of Jesus in such a classic way that you can just return to it over and over every Christmas, year after year, the way that many families, including mine, watch a movie like It's a Wonderful Life? I submit that that movie does not exist.
Yeah, I guess we have one. You know, for the Exodus, we have the Ten Commandments. Maybe there are others as well. And there are a good number of, a Passion of the Christ type Easter movies. But there really isn't that classic, this is the story of the birth of Christ that you got to watch each year with the family.
The closest that I can come to it is not a movie, but a piece of a movie. Now, fortunately, the movie itself is several hours long, and even the piece of it that deals with the nativity is over 100 minutes. The first 105 minutes of Franco Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth really is almost the film that I'm looking for. Zeffirelli takes his time in establishing the Jewish cultural milieu. He really wanted to tell the story of the Jewishness of Jesus, the Messiah, in a way that had never been done in cinema before at that time in 1977. He develops Israel's relationship with pagan Rome. He gives us the perspective of King Herod, played by Peter Ustinov. He develops the theology of the Messiah. He develops the cultural meant the way that marriage was seen in that culture and how Joseph and Mary's relationship was affected when Mary was found to be with child before they came together. There are a few things that are annoying about Jesus of Nazareth, as with almost any film, but those first 105 minutes that tell the story from the Annunciation to the birth of Jesus, and then even a little beyond to the presentation in the temple and so forth. That's the best I've got, really.
wow, you would think that somebody out there is going, I can make this movie. I can write it and I can make it. But it just hasn't been done yet. 120 years of cinema and still not done. Okay, so you also oh, by the way, I want to invite the caller again to call if you would like to talk about. But really, you're always welcome to talk about anything having to do with the Catholic faith and film and or film in general with Deacon Greidanis when he is on. But we're talking particularly about Christmas movies this afternoon. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. I did not know about this apparent disparity of opinion from C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton about A Christmas Carol, the story by Dickens. It became an extremely popular story, even from its first publishing, if I remember correctly. And we all know probably 20 different versions. I don't know if there's 20, but we know a lot of different versions of A Christmas Carol. Why the disagreement about it?
So, first of all, let me just say, I love Christmas Carol. I don't think I've ever seen a version of A Christmas Carol that I don't enjoy. You've got, of course, the classic Alistair Sim version. The George C. Scott is also good. I have to say my favorite version is actually the Muppet Christmas Carol. Even the Mr. Magoo version is good. And I even like the Robert Zemeckis motion capture one with Jim Carrey in a theme park kind of way. So great story. C.S. Lewis, in his essay on the decline of religion, really points at A Christmas Carol as a kind of cultural bellwether in the loss of interest in the incarnation on a cultural level. He says, instead of Mary and the angels and the Magi, you have these invented spirits of Dickens' own imagination. And then instead of the ox and the ass in the stable, the animals are the goose and the turkey in the poulterer's shop. But Chesterton, I think, approached the matter from a more Catholic perspective. For him, what was important about Christmas is, yes, what we celebrate at Christmas time, but also the way in which we celebrate it, that Christmas is a uniquely merry time, a festival season. And he saw A Christmas Carol as a celebration of that joy and festivity that with which Christians celebrate this holiday, and for him, the story is valuable for that reason.
But it is striking that I guess what Lewis is saying is it's really more English than Christian, and then Chesterton saying yes, but it's an English expression of how to be a Christian.
Exactly right, and I think that really goes to my enjoyment of so many Christmas films that really don't have to do in any significant way or any way at all with the incarnation. I mean, people, I want that great version of the story of the incarnation, but I'm not going to feel guilty about enjoying It's a Wonderful Life or any other Christmas movie or even a movie like Die Hard because it's not about the birth of Christ. I mean, if you think about it, the foods that we eat in celebration of this time, what we think of as Christmas foods, whether it's gingerbread or eggnog, or even if it's fruitcake, whatever it is that you like and enjoy, that's part of your Christmas festivities. And watching Christmas movies, even if they're not about the birth of Jesus, that can be part of your festivities, which of course isn't to say that we don't want to try to include films that speak to the real meaning of Christmas and to the real spirit of the season as much as we can.
Yeah, so I guess that's something that our own Carlo Broussard has been pointing out, that you don't necessarily have to be an enemy of secular Christmas in order to celebrate a fully Catholic Christmas. He said it's a way that's the most contact that many people can have with the birth of Christ, and it does encourage this merriment and joy and all that. As a Catholic, you want to remember not just the material goods, though, but explore the spiritual goods that come with Christ's birth. But that's kind of what you're saying, isn't it? That there's a way in which the spirit of the holiday, it's not a bad thing just to have a movie that's in that spirit.
No, not at all. And in fact, there are points of contact, and the one does softly segue into the other. I mean, any version of A Christmas Carol you watch, practically any version, I think everyone that I've seen, has real Christmas carols that talk about the birth of Christ. And there's always one of those lines, like Bob Cratchit telling his wife that Tiny Tim said that he thought it would encourage people at church to seeing a crippled boy to remember the one who made the lame walk and the blind see.
Yes.
Little things like that. And you know, and if you're watching It's a Wonderful Life, you know, you have the voice of St. Joseph up in heaven. And in the end, they're singing, is it, all of a sudden it's going out of my head. Is it Joy to the World? It isn't. It's another carol.
It's out of my head, too. I don't remember.
So these even these largely secular Christmas movies often contain at least some vestige of what the season is really about. And I think, you know, that's valuable. It's valuable to me. It's valuable to anyone.
Well, I did not know that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. So I'm going to have to ask you about that when we come back from the break. And I think it really testifies to the greatness of Charles Dickens that you're able to say of one of his stories. I even enjoyed the Mr. Magoo version of that. Like, who else can write a story so good that even the Mr. Magoo version is inspiring? Catholic Answer Cyber Week is coming down to the stretch. We've got a very special limited time offer through this weekend from now until Sunday at midnight. Promo code CALIVE18 will save you 35% on hundreds of items in our online shop. That's CALIVE18 for 35% savings until Sunday at midnight. Plus, we've got $5 flat rate shipping within the continental United States on everything. Just go to shop.catholic.com and use that promo code CALIVE18.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I'm really a revert. There are a lot of converts on Catholic radio, a lot of reverts, those who have come back to the faith. And ever since I came back to a practice of my faith, I started praying the rosary, going to even daily mass, God has led me on an amazing journey and used me in a lot of incredible ways that I never dreamed would have been possible.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, tonight, midnight Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Super big Friday here at Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Next hour, we will do the game show with our super top secret celebrity guest, who also serves as senior apologist here at Catholic Answers. I don't want to give it away who it is, but he teaches with some authority. What's up? Yeah, just did that. Our guest this hour is Deacon Stephen Gradonis, who is a movie reviewer, critic of some renown, who among his places for doing reviews are the National Catholic Register. You can read his article there about what is a Christmas movie. We were talking when we went to the break. I mentioned that I didn't know. This is bad. I don't know if you're supposed to admit these things, but I've never seen the movie Die Hard. I didn't know that it's a Christmas movie.
So yeah, Die Hard is absolutely a Christmas movie in the opinion of many people, at least. It's a movie that people watch around Christmas time, and it's a film that was really, in many ways, designed, according to the screenwriter, to be a kind of unconventional Christmas movie. In fact, there's a hint of that in the dialogue right in the beginning of the film, when Bruce Willis's character John McClane has been picked up from the airport by a limo driver named Argyle, whose name itself is a code for a pattern that many people associate with Christmas.
Right.
And he puts in a song by the band Run DMC called Christmas in Hollis. And Bruce Willis says to him, "Oh, couldn't we have some Christmas music?" And Argyle says, "Man, this is Christmas music." And the point is that if Run DMC can be Christmas music, then a movie like Die Hard can be a Christmas
movie.
Oh,
nice little twist. Well, you review for us in that piece in the National Catholic Register some of what's good in Christmas movies, some of what's bad. You do mention something that I think people are, especially people of my age, remember as a classic. Like there's definitely Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but something about a Charlie Brown's Christmas just sticks with you. And Linus's rendition, I think, of Luke's Gospel is...
Yes, Luke chapter 2.
Seems like one of the great things that ever happened on American television.
It is, and we owe that 100% to Charles Schulz. I should say that A Charlie Brown Christmas was really kind of thrown together at the last minute. The producer had the idea for it. He sold it to the advertisers before he really had all of his ducks in a row, and they threw it together very, very quickly. Charles Schulz wrote the script. It's pretty much from his taken straight from his comic strip work. And he had this vision of Linus doing this recitation from the nativity story from Luke chapter 2. Everyone was against it. The producer was against it. The advertisers were against it. CBS was against it. But Schulz stood his ground. He said, "We're going to do this." And the purity and the sincerity of Linus doing this reading after, you know, all of this grousing that Charlie Brown has been doing about the commercialization of Christmas, and isn't there anyone who can tell me what Christmas is really all about? It struck people. It's one of those things that strikes people across the spectrum, whatever your own religious persuasion is, whether you're a devout Christian, a cultural Christian, a lapsed Christian. Even if you are of some other faith, people just find it really moving. And it was that moment that really solidified A Charlie Brown Christmas as one of the perennial Christmas classics. And it is absolutely worth revisiting every year.
Every year, yeah. And I think it's the case that pop culture in general separates us from our sturdiest traditions. It tends to render everything shallow. And this is the case of pop culture just taking a moment to reconnect us to the most ancient traditions of who we are.
Absolutely. In the weeks of Advent leading up to Christmas, I really enjoy as much as possible working in movies that have some kind of Old Testament theme, you know, in keeping with the note of anticipation and identification with Israel, waiting for the Messiah. You mentioned Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments. That's a great Advent film. DreamWorks has what I like to call their animated Torah, the Prince of Egypt, which is an amazing retelling of the Exodus story, but then also the direct-to-home video prequel, Joseph, King of Dreams. But as we get right up to Christmas, in the days immediately before Christmas, in addition to the first 105 minutes of Jesus of Nazareth, A Charlie Brown Christmas is just perfect.
All right. So you're welcome. We have a lot of calls, and I want to go to callers. And you're welcome to share any other recommendations for Advent or Christmas. But what makes a bad Christmas movie? Having Jim Carrey in it, but you already recommended a Jim Carrey movie.
Yes. Yeah. It's almost like he's doing penance for How the Grinch Stole Christmas, that Ron Howard atrocity.
Yeah.
And there are so many terrible Christmas movies. The list is far longer than the list of good ones, actually. A number of them happen to star Tim Allen. I'm not a fan of any of the Santa Claus movies or of Christmas with the Cranks. And he's done others as well. I think – and then, you know, there's a Christmas for many people because we often – there's a certain – pleasure in iconoclasm. And, you know, a lot of people, we have to say, feel alienated and depressed around the holidays. And so if you watch something that has a kind of acerbic tone or even a raunchy tone, for some people that appeals to them because it feels like subverting the thing that's making them unhappy.
Oh, yeah.
So I can understand the appeal. I don't necessarily, you know, approve of those movies. But I think that's where some of the less edifying and less truly joyful movies about Christmas come from. But for me, Die Hard is not in that category. Die Hard is actually a fun movie.
Okay. Maybe I'll watch Die Hard. We, a lot, as I said, lots of callers. Shall we go to the phones?
Absolutely.
All right. Jack in Columbus, Ohio, listening to EWTN on St. Gabriel Radio. Jack, your question for Deacon Stephen Graydonis.
Thank you, gentlemen. Real quick question and a real quick comment, and then I will hang up and just listen to your response, because I've got a friend here who wants to hear this on the radio.
Okay.
I wonder if your guest is familiar with the Fourth Wise Man, which is kind of a B-grade, but I think does a lot towards what he's talking about. But my comment was, I think the life of Christ is such a grand story, but really the nativity is just a prologue to it. And, you know, I mean, a story needs rising action and conflict and all that kind of stuff. And I think I would be, if I was trying to write it, I would be very hard-pressed to write a good, stirring movie about the nativity, because I don't see the conflict there. And thank you very much, and I will just listen to you.
So there's a very insightful comment there, which is that not all stories are equally dramatic. It's one thing to praise the Ten Commandments or the Prince of Egypt, but when you really look at how drama works— the story of Moses in the Exodus is one of the most drama-ready stories in the entire Bible. I mean, it's got a hero and a villain. The mm-hmm. hero is an underdog who's under attack. There's clear injustice. There's rising action. There's dramatic spectacle. There's this huge climax of the Passover night, and then the even bigger climax of the parting of the Red Sea. The story of Jesus is not as drama ready as that, and it would be hard. I agree. It would be hard to tell the story of the birth of Jesus and make it dramatically compelling, at least, you know, as with the same kind of obviousness as the story of the Ten Commandments and the Exodus. Having said that, I do think it can be done. I think the first 105 minutes of Jesus of Nazareth is a great example of that. And there are other ways of telling stories besides drama. You can tell stories in a ritual way, which is what I think a movie like The Passion of the Christ does. Nobody watches The Passion of the Christ as pure drama. You watch it as an act of spirituality, the same way that you pray the sorrowful mysteries of the rosary, or that you walk the Via Dolorosa. The Fourth Wise Man is the Martin Sheen film. I just watched it a few years ago for the first time, and I liked it. I found it it certainly has some flaws, and there are things about it that are unpersuasive, but there is an appealing sincerity to it, and it does find a way to connect the story of Jesus' birth with the larger drama of his life and with the quest for God. So I would recommend that film, The Fourth Wise Man, but it's certainly not a film that I would care to watch every year.
Thank you very, very much for that question. Deacon Stephen Graydonis is our guest. We're talking movies, as you would with a deacon who is also a member of the New York Film Critics Circle. And we go now to, I believe it is Jose. I am not sure. Jose, are you there with us?
Yes, I'm here. I'm a truck driver driving through Nashville, Tennessee at this moment.
Oh, well, all right. How's the weather in Nashville?
It's cloudy, a little drizzle once in a while.
All right. Well,
anyway, there were two movies, and I know you mentioned Charlie Brown, but that was a TV classic.
Yeah.
There's one that's going to show my age, The Little Angel, which most of it happens in heaven, with Fred Gwynn and Tony Randall, and I forgot the little boy's name, Michael. That came out in the 60s, and then just recently was the Nativity Story, which I think had more a Protestant view of the birth of Christ and the journey from the Annunciation, both on Zechariah and Mary, and then the travel to Bethlehem.
All right. So the Littlest Angel and the Nativity movie.
Littlest Angel, film from 1969 with Fred Gwynn as an angel named Patience. Not a film that I have seen, but I'm certainly interested in it. I look forward to catching it sometime. The Nativity Story in 2006, and then more recently, just last year, a computer animated film called The Star, do undertake to tell the story of the birth of Jesus in dramatic form, and so they try to rectify this profound imbalance. The problem is, I like the Nativity story. I don't think it's a bad film. It's not what I would consider a real classic for a number of reasons. Some of the things that the film does, it does much better than others. In particular, the Magi are very they're very kind of comic figures. We'll have to pick it up after we get back from the break, I guess.
Okay, Jose, enjoy that drive through Tennessee, one of the most beautiful states out of the 50, and we will finish our conversation about the movie The Nativity with Stephen Gray Donis right after this. You're welcome to call if you want to talk about movies, 888-318-7884.
Every question is important. Ask yours today on Catholic Answers Live.
Advent is upon us and Christmas approaches. Catholic Answers wants you to know about our annual Christmas sale with hundreds of great faith-building resources all on sale at 20% off when you enter the promo code CALIVE18 at checkout. With great new products on doctrine, church history, morality, apologetics, and much more, there's simply no better time to stock up on resources to build up your faith and the faith of those around you. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com today to take advantage of what is truly the best Catholic sale on the internet going on now through the end of the year. And remember, enter promo code CALIVE18 at checkout and save 20% on hundreds of great resources throughout the store.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
Tim Staples, Trent Horn, Cy Kellett, Chris Check, Carlo Broussard. Our on-fire lineup of speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker for your event, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. Do you have questions about the Catholic faith? Listen for the best of Cold to Communion on Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern and live on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Cold to Communion on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We're talking the entirety of our conversation thus far has been about Christmas movies with Deacon Stephen Gray Donis. What makes a good Christmas movie? What makes a bad Christmas movie? What is a Christmas movie? I believe What is a Christmas Movie is the title of Deacon Gray Donis's article in the National Catholic Register. Jose, who's driving through Nashville, Tennessee, asked about two movies, The Littlest Angel and The Nativity. And you were finishing up about The Nativity when we had to go to a break.
Yeah. So and one of the things that Jose said, and this is very true, he said that it has a more Protestant perspective on the story of the birth of Jesus. That's not automatically bad. And as Catholics, I think, you know, the vast majority of what the Nativity story presents is at least consistent with what we believe as Catholics. It doesn't outright contradict it. But there are differences of sensibility in the way that the Virgin Mary is presented in her relationship with St. Joseph, in the response of her parents, Anne and Joachim, to the discovery of Mary's pregnancy. And there's a particularly, I think, from the screenwriter Mike Rich, there's a latent suspicion of the Virgin Mary that's nowhere clearer than in the treatment of the Magnificat. So Mary never says the Magnificat in the course of the film. The Visitation is there, but the Magnificat is omitted. They put the part of the Magnificat in over the end credits because some Catholic advisors said, hey, this is really important. You should have the Magnificat. But if you listen to the words of the Magnificat, every reference to Mary herself practically is omitted from it. So instead of saying the Lord has done great things for me, it simply says the Lord has done great things. The way that Mary is omitted from that movie's version of the Magnificat is really kind of weird, and it is a sign of the Protestant sensibility at work. Having said that, I still enjoy the Nativity story. I think it's a good film. It's just not a great one and not one I'm going to watch every year. And that goes very much also for The Star, the animated version last year from Tim Recker, a Catholic filmmaker and animator. He's a very talented filmmaker. And I think he can do better than The Star, and I look forward to seeing what he does in the future.
Fair enough. Well, the Christmas movies are coming out now. Well, I guess they're about to come out, but there's all there'll be, I'm sure, a slew of them between now and Christmas Day. There was The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, the Boris Karloff version cartoon.
Yes.
Which was a staple of my childhood and maybe yours too. I don't know. Then there was the Jim Carrey version, which really has no reason to exist. And then there is a new one. And so my suspicion is you can't beat the Boris Karloff version, but you've seen it. What do you say?
So, yeah, the Jim Carrey Grinch, when I saw it in 2000, the year that I founded Decent Films, was so awful. I came out of the theater so angry I wanted to condemn the film in Dr. Seuss's own voice. And so I wrote my first review in Seussian verse. And I've done that with all the Dr. Seuss movies ever since. And so here is my Dr. Seuss review of the new Grinch from Illumination. Do the tinsels of Tinseltown like Christmas Day? From my lair on Mount Critic, it's tricky to say. They tinsel up holiday movies each year, but I don't see much joy or holiday cheer. For years now, they've built up a gloomyless glut of glum Christmas flicks. They've been stuck in a rut, from R-rated dregs to Tim Allen-ish dreck, and the Jim Carrey Grinch, which is awful as heck. The tinsels don't Seuss well. Their efforts fall flat, from the unspooky Lorax to Mike in the Hat. Only Horton was done right, kind and angelic, and Blue Sky's Whoville was drolly geyselic. But Ron Howard's Whoville was ugly and vile, a hell in the burbs in true Tinseltown style. Shallow, promiscuous, cruel through and through. If I'd been born there, I would be a Grinch too. Now we're back in Whoville for the Grinch's return with the Lorax and Minions crew. Cause for concern. While they've mastered the secrets of box office glory, their despicable debut was their last decent story. It's easy to see how this thing could go wrong with Lorax-ish satire that doesn't belong in this tale of kind who's who welcome a crank, enlarging his heart and forgiving his prank. So I'm happy to state, though my praise may be faintish, my critical heart is more pleased than complaintish. The tinsels have managed to Seuss out this one, and it's decent, good-hearted, forgettable fun. It's visually playful, with gadgetry groovy, repurposed in new ways, both grinchy and poovy. Especially the heist, a logistical dream as much as a mean anti-holiday scheme. Replacing Karloffian malice and spite, Cumberbatchian grousing makes this one Grinch light. It's a kinder and gentler tale than we've seen. Of course, he's not nice, but this Grinch is less mean. I knew that he wasn't as mean as he said when he caved to his pets and let them in his bed. And one is a reindeer as big as a moose. This pushover's not the guy scripted by Seuss. But he does still hate Christmas. The whole thing is bosh. Except gingerbread might be worth a nosh. And scenes of togetherness of kith and kin, he sneers, but it's clear he's conflicted within. And you know, I'm okay with this sour sweet sinner clinging to mean, tempted by Christmas dinner. The Whos are quite decent, I'm happy to say, in an innocent, cheerful, Ned Flanders-ish way. They may go a bit far with the whole Christmas thing, but they sing for real carols about Christ the King. Then there's Cindy Lou Who, bouncy and sprightly, a bit like young Ellie from Up, very slightly, determined to make contact with Santa Claus, but her mother's well-being is her only cause. Mom is single, a nurse, and works hard to get by. It's the third dadless Seuss film with no reason why. There are bits that don't work, to tell you the truth, like glimpses of Grinchy's unfortunate youth. There's hit-and-miss slapstick and weak gags are made, and added narration doesn't quite make the grade. Pharrell Williams' delivery falls a bit short, and a pestic tetrameter isn't his forte. But the group hug finale sells it with feeling, and Whoville, though silly, is warmly appealing. All are accepted, whatever the hue or the shade or the size or the shape of the Who. Even nasty outsiders, green furred and alone, find kindness and mercy to such as them shown. The classic tale takes this too much as a given. Seuss's Grinch is converted, but is he forgiven? When he brings the Who's things back down from Mount Crumpet, announcing himself with a literal trumpet, does he apologize, repent in the least, or merely presume of his place at the feast? Grace is a gift, not a matter of course, and that's one way this movie improves on its source.
Wow! Thank you so much for that. I'm very impressed that you got a an odd rhyming what would you call that? A name check in there. You got your pentameter in.
Yes.
That was wow. So I have a little bit more hope then for this Grinch, because when I saw it, I thought,
you know, it's not bad.
Okay.
It's really not bad.
And the Grinch repents.
I'm not going to. He does, and he apologizes, and then he goes with his shoulders slumped back up to Mount Crumpet, and, you know, not assuming that he's going to be welcomed or forgiven in any way. And then so the Who's take a much more active role in reaching out to him, opening their doors to him, and there really is a true message there about forgiveness and redemption, I think, that goes even beyond the original tale by Dr. Seuss.
Well, I'm very impressed. I feel like I have to do a review of your review now. It was so good. But but I'm also happy to hear that it seems like everything's getting remade and remade and remade. But maybe there's a little redemption there for the Grinch. It's a little saved from Ron Howard.
Who
is not a bad man. He just made a bad movie.
Yes, that's right. And sometimes, you know, the badness of one film can help you appreciate and understand the goodness of another film. I don't know if I would be quite so appreciative of that aspect of the Who's active role in forgiving the Grinch if the Ron Howard film hadn't been quite so bad.
On Facebook, there's some complaint because there are certain folks who liked the Ron Howard version, also like the Tim Allen Santa Claus movies. And we love you. You are our brothers and sisters in Christ. It's just that you don't have any taste in movies. No, that is not. That didn't come out right.
I would never take anything away from anyone else's enjoyment of a film. If I don't like a film and you do, that's fantastic. In my reviews, I try to put forth arguments supporting my reasons for liking or disliking films. You know, I think that The Grinch, the Ron Howard film, really I could do my rhyming review of that film too, but I'm not going to. It really makes the Who's out to be materialistic and greedy and selfish. And then there's some really subversive humor in there, including some nasty sexual humor in the Ron Howard Grinch. At one point we see the Who's coming together at a party and they're dropping their keys in a jar, which is a reference to an adultery game. And then there's also at another point, a Who sees somebody looks at his baby and says to his wife, "He looks like your boss." You know, these kinds of things, I think.
Yeah.
Really, and you know, kids aren't going to notice that, but as a grown up, I see it and I resent it, and then it makes everything else that I don't like about the movie that much worse.
Yeah, who's looking for a body Christmas?
At least not a body version of the Grinch.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so we have more calls for you. I made callers wait, but you are glad you waited, callers. I know you are, because you got to hear that review. Our first issue on 2019 of the Catholic Answers magazine, which is still in print. Many Catholic magazines are no longer in print, but Catholic Answers magazine, we believe in printing and getting into people's hands and leaving it on the coffee table and all that, whatever it may cost. And the first issue of 2019 will be the ABCs of apologetics, 26 articles from A to Z on apologetics. Gift subscriptions make great gifts. Just go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up. Give one to your friends, your family, your priests, maybe your students, maybe your teacher, maybe a seminarian, you know. Sign up now at CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
We need Catholic radio because we need the voice of the church in the public forum. We live in a time that the secular voice dominates so thoroughly that we need to get that Catholic perspective out. Just as Fulton Sheen used radio and TV in the last century, we need to continue to use. This means to announce the Catholic faith in the public forum.
Bishop Robert Barron thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Answers Live. We are delighted to have with us Deacon Stephen Gradonis, who is both an ordained member of the Catholic clergy and recognized member of the film critics community, especially as a member of the New York Film Critics Circle. We've got some calls for you, shall we?
Absolutely.
All right, Michael. I do not know where Michael is, but Michael, you are welcome here. Your question for Deacon Gradonis.
I'm right here. Hi, fellas. That was a great review, by the way.
It was, wasn't it?
Thank you so much.
It was good. I followed it the whole way. My question is this. Earlier, one of the fellows said that, there wasn't enough drama and drive in the whole story of the nativity scene. And I vaguely remember, and I had seen Father Payton's, I think it was the Family Theater, did a little take on the nativity one time.
Yes.
And actually put in the part about Herod and the wise men having come to him first. And
yes,
personally, and I was wondering your opinion, do you think that would be some drama to tell from the aspect of Herod? It adds some tension to it, and the wise men on him trying to do that. I mean, obviously what he did 2 years later was horrendous.
So the character of Herod certainly is an important source of drama in many versions of the story. The nativity story in 2006 zeroed in on that, you know, like a laser. The film opens with scenes from the slaughter of the innocents, and then we flash back to the time of the Annunciation, and later catch up with it again. Many versions have done very well with the part of Herod. I already mentioned Peter Ustinov's fantastic Herod in Franco Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth. Unfortunately, that film really botches the relationship between Herod and the Magi. And this is my main objection to those first 105 minutes of Jesus of Nazareth, is that the Magi, one of whom is played by James Earl Jones, never go to Herod, and not only don't they go to them, it's not just that they omitted it, it's a plot point. We have Herod complaining, they cross my borders, but they don't come to see me. And you know, that specific omission of that whole aspect of the story in such flagrant violation to Matthew chapter 1, or it's Matthew chapter 2, Matthew's nativity anyway. That's a really big problem for me with Zeffirelli's version of the story. So I think Herod has been a strong part in many versions of that story, and I think if they ever make the classic version that I'm really holding out for, we'll certainly see that.
Michael, thank you very, very much for that call. Let us go now to Joe in Texas, watching on Facebook. Joe, your question for Deacon Stephen Gradonis.
How are you guys doing? Great to for you to have me on. Quick question. I'm above for authentic, historical, accurate movies. I think like Passion of the Christ was pretty good. But as far as the nativity, I want you to give me some feedback on this. Not that I believe in this, but I've seen a couple of scientific theories that, you know, how in Jewish days, the sacrificial lambs were born in the spring. And some scientific study says that maybe Jesus was born like in March 20th. And then these sacrificial lambs are then taken to Bethlehem, right? And then a year later, they're dispersed out to be sacrificed, which at the same time, Jesus was sacrificed in April, I do believe, right? I mean, and then that the Magi did see the star and followed it. It took them some time to get there, and they did get to Bethlehem on December 25th. Not that he was born December 25th, but that they actually saw him December 25th. I know the Catholic Church, we do celebrate it December 25th, as you know, but I don't know if it's confirmation that the Magi saw him or if Jesus was actually born December 25th.
Right.
All right, Joe.
So,
to weigh in on that, because I think it's an important question.
So Christmas, December 25th, is the date that we celebrate the birth of Christ. It's not the date that anyone says dogmatically that Jesus was actually born, although you do find people who will make a principled historical argument that Jesus was actually born on December 25th. I've seen some interesting arguments. I'm not going to weigh in on them, but I point you to them if you want to do some Googling. The visitation of the Magi, which we celebrate as Epiphany, has traditionally been celebrated in the church on January 6th. So the idea that, I mean, there are certainly other candidates for when Jesus could have been born, and I am familiar with the theory that he was born in the springtime. Most versions of the story of the birth of Jesus take advantage of the fact that the story is set in the Middle East, in a region of the world where, you know, there isn't a lot of snow, even in wintertime. And so you don't have to pin it down to a specific time of the year. It's generally depicted as more cold than not, though. And very often Joseph is off gathering firewood or perhaps bringing water when the baby Jesus is born, so that we don't have to deal with awkward questions about, you know, Joseph's role in the actual physical delivery of Jesus, and perhaps the question of how Jesus came into the world. Was it miraculous? Was he born in the normal way? Most movies kind of piously gloss over that, these kinds of questions.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks very, very much for that. Disney's got a Christmas movie. I don't know, Christmas or Christmassy movie, The Nutcracker. Are you going to give that a fine review like you did for The Grinch?
Well, I can talk about it. You know, you and I were talking offline, Cyrus, about Disney's penchant for remaking absolutely everything, and they have the new Lion King coming up by Jon Favreau, the director of The Jungle Book. And The Nutcracker and The Four Realms isn't exactly a remake, but it is Disney trying to capitalize on their Fantasia brand, which has this sequence, The Nutcracker Suite, that uses a lot of the same music that we hear in The Nutcracker and The Four Realms. So they've done here a little bit what they did with The Sorcerer's Apprentice back in 2010. They've taken a story or a sequence from Fantasia, and, you know, this is kind of an exercise in brand management. So they've transformed it into, they've given it this kind of hero's journey arc. It's now the story of Clara instead of like she is in the original Nutcracker. You know, she's a girl who's having some kind of dream on Christmas about her Christmas presents. Now she gets swept into this alternate world. It's a little bit Tim Burton, Alice in Wonderland. It's a little bit Chronicles of Narnia. The echoes of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe are particularly strong. But unfortunately, Disney just kind of throws all this stuff at the wall to see what sticks, and it doesn't come together in any way that's either dramatically or emotionally satisfying. There's, for whatever reason, it seems like all Disney movies have to kill off one of the parents. Either the father or the mother is missing. In this case, it's the absent mother. The mother has died, even though, you know, Clara in the original story has both of her parents, and the father therefore is kind of glum and distant and gloomy, and then they get reconciled in the end, but there's no emotional weight to any of that. So it's really a film, I think, that has no true inspiration and no true theme or message or moral. And I am happy to say that audiences have roundly rejected it, and it's one of the year's big flops.
I have to say, I hardly even knew about it until I started thinking about Christmas movies this year. So, So it's one of the big flops. I want to ask you about a few movies coming up because the blockbusters also open around Christmas. Was that always the case, by the way? Was Christmas always blockbuster time, or is that kind of new?
Well, so there are really the two big movie seasons are the summer season and the end of the year holiday season.
Oh, okay.
And there are two reasons for that. One of them is that's when people, and especially when children, are off of school, the families have more free time. They're more likely to go to the movies. And then also at the end of the year, there is big incentive for Hollywood to get out the prestigious films, the films that they hope will win awards, because people who give out awards, especially like the Academy, they have very short attention spans. And if a movie was released back in, you know, March or April or May, they've long forgotten about it. And they really want to kind of reward the films that are in theaters now, because that's what's going to benefit from, oh, such and such a film got an Oscar nomination. So that's the reason why we see a lot of movies coming out at this time of year.
All right. Well, I didn't prep you for this question, so I hope you don't take offense. But I just want to know, between December 14th and December 21st, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Universe, or Spider-Verse,
yes,
Mary Poppins, Aquaman, and Bumblebee will open. My question is simply, are you looking forward to any of them?
Yes, I am. And I've bitterly resentful that I have not already seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. You've mentioned a number of times that I'm a member of the New York Film Critics Society. Just yesterday, we voted in our year-end awards, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse won Best Animated Film of 2018. I tragically was not able to cast my vote for it because the screening was on a Sunday morning and I was in church. So I haven't seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And anyone listening who's heard me before knows I am a huge Spider-Man fan. So I'm very much looking forward to that. A lot of my friends are telling me that it's great. I can't tell you that, but I'm looking forward to coming back and telling you what I thought of it. I'm also, I have to say, kind of looking forward to Aquaman because the director of Aquaman, James Wan, who's also the director of the Conjuring films, films with a significant Catholic, a positive Catholic dimension to them. If you want to see positive portrayal of Catholicism in a mainstream Hollywood film, watch a horror movie. That's where you're going to find it. James Wan is also the director of Aquaman, and he is a good director, and he knows his way around an action scene. From what I've seen in the trailers, some of the action in Aquaman looks better than the action in, like, you know, 95% of the superhero films that have come out over the last 10 years. So it's possible that this December we will get two of the better superhero movies of recent times.
I suspect something is going to happen at the end of Aquaman, and that is you are not going to be pleased with. So let me just throw this out to you. I imagine Aquaman will be a cliffhanger at the end, preparing you for a sequel.
Oh, there's nothing I hate worse than that. I feel very strongly that, you know, in television, if you want to keep me hanging on for the next episode that's coming out next week, or even if you want to end your season on a cliffhanger and, you know, bring me back in September, that's one thing. But a movie, I'm plunking down my $15. I'm giving you, you know, 90 minutes to 200 minutes or more of my life. And you should tell me a story, and it should have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And this, the thing that the Marvel Cinematic Universe in particular has done of making everything a middle movie. It's you never actually get to the resolution. At least we haven't so far.
Yeah.
I find that very frustrating.
Well, maybe the next Avengers movie will be the final. No, maybe the next one after that. They left us hanging on the last one. We only have a couple seconds, but any movies that you think we might have overlooked in the last few months or even a year that maybe people should make an effort to find?
First Man did not do well at the box office, and it's a better movie than you probably think that it is. So I'd recommend that.
Oh, all right. So that's the Neil Armstrong movie.
Yes, starring Ryan Gosling. There's some controversy over the film. I think was really undeserved. You can find my review at decentfilms.com.
Where else can people find you, Deacon Gradonis?
I am also at ncregister.com, the National Catholic Register. You can follow me on Twitter, Decent Films, and Facebook at Decent Films as well.
Thanks so much. I love when we do these hours. I wonder if we can. Oh, we'll have to ask Darren. I don't know if you're available, but it would be good to do an end of year movie thing. But we'll...
Absolutely.
Well, I should probably talk to you about that off the air. All right, coming up next, super secret guest for the game show. It's time for the Catholic Answers Game Show right after this on Catholic Answers Live.